Hello, and welcome to the Legal Marketing 2.0 podcast. I am your host, Guy Alvarez, and today we're going to talk about a very interesting topic. We're going to talk about how law firms are doing sector-focused sales and client development. Now, many of you are probably aware that AmLaw 200 firms have started to hire and work with chief client officers. And today we have Baker Botts chief client officer, Catherine Zinn, as our guest. Now, Catherine has 25 years of experience liaising directly with clients in tech, energy, and finance, including spending 15 years at DLA Piper and Warwick. As I mentioned, she now serves as Baker Botts chief client officer, where she oversees various aspects of growth and strategy, along with Baker Botts sector-focused sales, client development, marketing, communications, business development, coaching, lateral partner integration, and other things. Catherine and her team ensure that the firm is a steward of their clients' businesses. Catherine also commits a significant portion of her time connecting high-profile executives, alumni, and other friends of the firm to jobs and to public company board seats with an emphasis on diversity. Lastly, Catherine serves as a board member and advisor to various for-profit and nonprofit companies and investors focused on diverse founders. Welcome to the show, Catherine.
Guy, thank you so much for this opportunity, and special thanks to everybody who's decided to listen in today.
So the first question I have for you is, do you ever sleep?
Thank you for the kind introduction. Yes, I do. And yet I am reminded that I've been alive for a while when I hear a description of, you know, how I spend my time. It's all true. Guy, I also want to make an invitation to all of your listeners. If there's anything that you and I talk about today that sparks somebody's interest or gives them pause, they don't agree, really welcome outreach and further dialogue with anyone and everyone on LinkedIn.
Fantastic. And for that, we will post Catherine's LinkedIn profile as well as a link to the website on the show notes of the episode. So, Catherine, let's dive in and let's talk about, you know, what's going on in the legal industry. Obviously, there's lots of changes, increased competition. And one of the things that we're seeing, as I mentioned, is more and more firms are hiring chief client officers. Tell me a little bit about why you think that is. And, you know, in your mind, what does a chief client officer bring to the table for law firms?
Sure. Well, thank you. And first, if I may just say, I believe that there's never been a better time to be in our profession, defined broadly as legal and business, and supporting people who, lawyers and others who serve clients. The market is on fire, and yes, it's highly competitive. And I do believe that the emergence of the chief client officer role is a sign of the times, that if you want to get different results and be effective in competing, you'll need to do a few things differently. Caveat, Guy, you know, my role, the title is chief client officer. I will say, if you just looked at what I do every day and the great privilege I have is overseeing, what others would really is synonymous with the functions of chief marketing officer, chief business development officer, communications, etc. So I do want to say, although we decide to call it chief client officer, that was also the case at Oric, and you'll see that that title is emerging and prevalent in the legal industry now generally. I do also oversee those other functions that one might consider more traditional functions that you see in the industry.
Understood. What exactly do you think is driving the hiring of chief client officers? What do you think, you know, understanding that you also do marketing and business development, but, you know, what do you think client chief client officers are looking to do, or what are firms looking for them to do that perhaps they hadn't have someone in that spot earlier?
Yeah, so I would say that I have the singular focus, along with, of course, many of my colleagues, of having the interest of the client represented in everything that we do. You know, mm-hmm. perfect world, every communication you send out to your client base, how we engage with our clients and how we spend their time, and how we focus first and foremost on, frankly, delighting our clients, because everything begins and ends with that client satisfaction. So previously, I don't mean to suggest for a second that there weren't people who were focused on those things, but you can't afford not to have somebody who is singularly focused on that. And by the way, cross-functionally, not limited to the world of marketing and business development.
Right. So what would you say every client wants from their law firm? What are the things that you have heard from your clients in terms of what they're looking for in the client-law firm relationship?
So I'm going to go to a quote that I heard from a client who was sitting around the table with other general counsels. And he said to me, I was working at a different law firm, and this is no reflection on the law firm, but he said, please go back to your law firm and tell the lawyers that they all are getting it wrong. When they approach me, they talk about themselves, then their law firms, then their business, and then me. Catherine, they have it exactly backwards. I want them to demonstrate their interest in me personally, then my company, then how the law firm may or may not be able to serve me. And frankly, if there's a role for them, fine. I want to know about it, but I want it to be in that order. So that is literally the client wants you to focus on her first. Mm-hmm. It sounds so simple when we say it, and frankly, so few law firms and lawyers do this regularly enough. And I'll just go further and say specifically what are the things that they want us to focus on. They want us to help them look good in front of their board, in front of their CEO. And I'm thinking of general counsels as I say this, but of course, that's true of anybody that you're engaging with at the client. And they want us, of course, to be able to look around corners for them. What does that look like? They want us to be able to talk to them about benchmarking. What are similarly situated clients doing about fill in the blank, be it ESG or some area of their industry or risk. So I'll just stop there and more to follow.
Excellent. So one of the things that I'm starting to see is for a very long time, sales was a dirty word in law firms. Lawyers never wanted to talk about sales, and it wasn't a term that most law firms used. But now we're starting to see, you know, as competition increases, as we see other types of organizations get into the legal industry, alternatives, legal service providers, the large accounting consulting firms, we're starting to see that terminology come in. And as you mentioned, an increased focus on client centricity and the needs and experience that the client has. Why are sales and law firms exploding, and why do you think they're here to stay?
Sure. I love this question. Thank you. At first, I want to say to listeners, if you feel like your law firm is not ready to use sales terminology, don't worry about it. Just make sure that you're doing all the things that a great salesperson would do. And maybe you'll come around to using that terminology. Maybe you won't. However, for those of you that are willing to be a bit more provocative with the people around you and you have not yet adopted what you would consider a traditional sales function, I invite you to think about the following. What business, what client of yours doesn't have a sales team? That's right, not a one. They all have a sales team. Number two, and more importantly, because that last point is just a little too cute. How do the clients feel? And this is the single most important thing that you should use in making decisions in how you liaise with your clients. How does the client feel? And how does the client benefit from working with a salesperson? The clients to a person feel great about it, as long as that salesperson, that client relations professional, is listening well, understands enough about the business, and critical that if they have an area for improvement or something they want done, that person needs to be able to do it or have the influence internally in order to be responsive to the client. That's it.
Makes total sense. So, you know, one of the things that I know having been a lawyer in my past and gone to law school is they don't really teach you business in law school, and they certainly don't teach you how to generate business, sell, be good at business development and rainmaking. So, you know, I know that a lot of firms are looking to enhance the sales acumen of their lawyers. And one of the things they're doing is they're investing in coaching, right? So that lawyers can learn more about the tools and techniques they should be using when it comes to sales or business development. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, what you think the role in coaching is at law firms and why every lawyer really needs a plan to help to, you know, generate more business.
Sure. So Guy, I also love this question because I love lawyers. And by the way, I am not a lawyer. Pretty much everybody else in my family is. But I want to hit that point first. You know, if you work in a law firm and you're surrounded by lawyers and you don't have respect and real affection, really, for the people around you, don't do this job. It's too hard. And frankly, that's because the job of a lawyer is really hard right now. I hope people who are lawyers love their work, but right now they're under a tremendous amount of pressure. Mm-hmm. And I say that because that's the starting point. And that's why a lawyer does need a plan, and they need to have a plan that suits them. One size fits one. So it's just like a personal training plan. One person's going to have great success with yoga. Another person's going to run a marathon. And you need to figure out, do you have a yoga enthusiast or a marathoner on your hands as a coach? And the things that we encounter most often are around fear. And it's typically fear of the unknown, fear of things that make us uncomfortable, and most prevalent is fear of failure. So it is our job as coaches to help the individual get past those things. And I'll just say one of the most outstanding things about a lawyer is that she's been trained to be analytical and to be right. And so one of the things we need to do is have them flex a different muscle, which is to be curious and to be comfortable asking open-ended questions that you may or may not know the answer to. That's okay, because somebody that you know does know the answer. So I would say coaching is a best practice, by the way. Again, pulling back from any industry, every outstanding executive has a coach, be that person a CEO or a politician or what have you. So I just want to, again, say that the legal industry is no different.
Totally agree. So I know one of the things that lawyers, well, I think actually beyond lawyers, most business professionals struggle with is making decisions, right? Making decisions about the future, deciding what to focus on, how to enhance their practice or the things that they're offering. And so, you know, within law firms, decision-making is really hard. What would you say are the top three things from a decision-making perspective a lawyer can do to guide you to success?
Yeah. So I think first, and I'll take decision-making also broadly from the institutional level and address it there. Mm-hmm. We all need to go 10 times faster. If you're going to thrive in this current environment, you have to go faster and just make decisions very quickly, and knowing that some of your initiatives are going to not work, and seriously be comfortable with that. So that's number one, go faster. Number two with decisions, I think you need to know who you are and stick to your knitting. So have a strategy. So in the case of Baker Botts, we focus on the tech and energy sectors. Our business is split equally between the two. And then we have areas of excellence within those sectors. We know who we are, and we don't try to pretend to be someone that we're not. So I think that informs the business that you do. It informs who you want to recruit into the organization, and it helps everybody know what their jobs are every day. So you need to have that strategy without question. And then you need to ask yourself, knowing you have a strategy, you're going to stick to your knitting. Is the decision you're going to make, and I'll use kind of a mundane one, are you going to create a new practice group to address some area of the law? All too often, the law firm looks internally, and they start thinking about internal considerations and how people are paid and how they're organized and who's going to lead it. Nonsense. Don't do any of that. ask yourself, is the client better off if we do that? And if so, in what ways? And there's your answer. And I think it helps you make decisions much more quickly if you apply the, is it good for our client first?
I love it. And that's really the recurring theme of what you're saying, that client centricity is so important. Yet from my perspective, I see a lot of law firms struggle with viewing at the world the way their clients do. And I think one of the things that I think is missing, and I wonder if you agree, is that firms don't invest enough time really getting to know their clients, both as an individual, but also as an entity, and really understanding, you know, what's important to them, where their challenges may lie, what their opportunities are. Do you agree with that? And if so, why do you think that is?
Yeah, Guy, I do agree with that, the why, but I'm going to skip to a suggested solution for our listeners for themselves and to support maybe the attorneys that they work with every day. So what I recommend is that you think like a CEO, and specifically the CEO of your client and the board. What is the dialogue in the boardroom every day? And if you understand the top five things that are the risks, opportunities that the industry around them, the competitors, et cetera, if you understand that landscape, then you will know the things that you should be talking to the company about. And frankly, more importantly, you'll know what not to bother them with because it's not on the hot list.
Yeah.
And you're wasting their time. So I do believe that understanding the client is a phrase that we all throw around a great deal. Okay, by the way, I had multiple clients tell me, I don't expect you to know it like I do, but I expect you to demonstrate that you're trying. And that's good enough. And so again, it goes to the, you don't have to be right. You just have to demonstrate the curiosity and that you've invested the time.
Excellent. One last question I'll have for you, Catherine. So, you know, many of our listeners do not necessarily work at large law firms. They work at smaller firms where there's a team of one when it comes to the marketing and business development team. And some of them I know because I speak to them, struggle with getting a seat at the table, right? Being able to be thought of more than just someone that's, you know, putting together pitches or setting up events or getting out the firm newsletter. They don't really are looked upon as someone that really has a seat at the table and has an ability to make suggestions from a strategic perspective. What would you say to those types of people? What suggestions might you have to enable them to get a seat at the table or get their voices heard when it comes to more strategic type of initiatives?
Thank you for asking this question. So first, I do want to say, although my personal experience is with larger law firms, I want to say that the professionals that I have met in my travels who work at smaller firms and maybe that one woman or one man band, they are some of the most effective, smart, and capable people. And I've learned a lot from them. So I want to hear from those people in particular in the future. So I guess I don't agree, well, professional in our industry, I don't agree with the statement that you're given a seat at the table.
Mm-hmm.
You have it. You know this business. And the day you stop behaving like an order taker is the day you no longer are an order taker. So what do I mean by that? When you think like a CEO, and in this case, I want you to think like the CEO or managing partner of your organization or law firm, regardless of the size. And I want you to think about the opportunities and the impediments to driving revenue and pick three things that you know you need to do and make a few recommendations about what they should be and what your role should be. And you now have a seat at the table and you are running that law firm. And that's what I hope everybody who's listening today will take away from this conversation is that you absolutely know more than you think you do, and that you are absolutely in a position to drive revenue, success, and attract and retain talent. I'm certain more than you give yourself credit for.
Fantastic. That is great, great advice. And I totally agree with you. All right. Well, unfortunately, we've run out of time today. although we could probably go on and on. But before I let you go, Catherine, is there one additional word of advice that you would give to our listeners, something that, you know, if there was one thing that you want them to take away from today's conversation, you would have them do?
Yeah, thanks. Let's end where we started, in the spirit of we really are all in this together. Ask for help. There is no law firm, no individual who has nailed every aspect of our business, and no one is doing this perfectly. So help each other. And that's, again, if I can be of service and anybody wants to talk about what sales looks like in law firms or any other way in which we can support one another, now more than ever, I think is very much the right thing to do. And don't feel in any way shy. It's a form of strength, not a form of weakness, to ask for help.
I love it. Thank you so much for that. And we will definitely post a link to your LinkedIn profile so that people want to get in touch with you, they're able to do so. So, Catherine, thank you so much for your time today. I know you're extremely busy and it's great to have you on the show. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you for this opportunity. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. And for our listeners, I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you want to make sure you don't miss any future episodes, you can go to goodtobesocial.com/podcast. There you can subscribe so that you can get all the episodes. You can also check out some of our past episodes. Thank you again, Catherine. Thank you to everyone for listening today. And we shall see you next time. Thank you.